So this year in our men's meetings, we're talking about going deeper into the Bible. And the first time that we talked about this, I think it was back in February, we talked about reading the Bible on its own terms and not making demands of the Bible that the Bible itself isn't prepared to meet. And so we talked about devotional reading, and devotional reading is good, and it can be rich and it can be fruitful, but it's not the only way to read the Bible. And if that's the only way that you read the Bible, then you might be frustrated a lot of the time when we're in books like Leviticus or the Minor Prophets or some of the genealogies and stuff. You're probably not feeling like you're getting a lot of stuff out of that. And that's because devotional reading is not the only way to read. And, you know, you're not always going to get a cookie just because you open the Bible. You're not always going to get some kind of spiritual impression every time you read. So that was the first session that we had. And then 2 months ago when we met, I talked about the symbolic world of the Bible. And I talked about this a little bit last night, about how in the Bible, things are themselves, but they're also more than themselves. And I used the example of my wedding ring, which, as you may notice, is no longer on my finger because I lost it in the Gulf of Mexico last month. And so, but good news, I am still married. I am still every bit as married as I was when I was wearing the ring. I just don't have a ring anymore to let ladies know I'm off the market. So, yeah. So, and as we've seen in Galatians, you know, circumcision is a physical cutting of the foreskin. That's what circumcision is. And if that's all it was, Paul probably wouldn't care about it all that much. But for Paul, it's not just that. It's not just the physical act. It also means going back to slavery. It means being justified according to the works of the law. And that's why Paul says you can't submit to that. It's more than just the physical act. And this month, I want to talk about reading cumulatively. And what I mean by that is wherever you are in the Bible, whether you're in Exodus or whether you're in Joshua or the Psalms or Matthew or Revelation, wherever you are, you need to have an idea of everything that came before it. Now, you don't have to absolutely know everything that came before it, but you do have to remember that the biblical writer of whatever book you're reading has everything that came before it in mind. They're drawing from everything that came before it. And so if you're reading Exodus, you need to have all of Genesis in mind, because the writer has Genesis firmly in mind and is drawing off the major storylines in Genesis. If you're reading Joshua, you need to have the whole Pentateuch to some degree in mind. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, because the writer of Joshua has all of that in his mind. If you're reading the poetry books, if you're reading Job and Psalms and Proverbs, Ecclesiastes and Song of Songs, all that, you need to have the history of Israel in mind, because the writers at the time are thinking about what's been going on in Israel's history with God. They're drawing from it. You know, we often think of Proverbs as a book of wisdom, and it is, but we can take a lot of those proverbs and just think, well, they don't have any context. These are just wise sayings, and they're not rooted in anything. But in Proverbs 2, it shows that the book of Proverbs itself is tied strongly to Israel's history. And so Proverbs 2, 20 to 22 says, it's talking about wisdom and why we should acquire wisdom. It says, "So you will walk in the way of the good and keep to the paths of the righteous, for the upright will inhabit the land, and those with integrity will remain in it. But the wicked will be cut off from the land, and the treacherous will be rooted out of it." Well, the land, I mean, that's, you know, that is the promised land. And so it's tied to that story of God's promise to Abraham to give him land and for his people to live in it. Proverbs isn't just this book of wisdom that's cut off from the rest of the scriptural story. If you're reading the Gospels, to some degree, you need to have all the Old Testament in mind, or at least be willing to look up things. if you have a Bible that has the cross references in it, you know, where it'll have the little letters and it'll show you other parts of the Bible that that verse refers to, that can be very helpful for seeing how everything that came before it is informing what you're reading right there. And Jesus had the whole story of Israel, everything in the Old Testament, firmly in mind when he spoke and when the gospel writers wrote about it. What did Jesus say to the two on the road to Emmaus? Right? He came up upon them and he said, "O foolish ones, and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and enter into his glory? And beginning with Moses and the prophets, he interpreted to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself." So Jesus goes right back to Moses and the prophets and basically says, you guys should have known what was going to happen because it's all right there. And so he holds them accountable for knowing what Moses and the prophets had written. If you're reading the epistles, if you're reading the letters of Paul, and if you're reading the other epistles, the writers assume that you know all the scriptures before it. Think about Galatians and the time we spent in Galatians. What books of the Bible has Paul been referring to in some way? You just go ahead and shout them out. Okay, Genesis, talking about the Abraham story in two different places. What else?
Isaiah.
What?
Isaiah.
Isaiah, right? He's drawing on Isaiah. Also the Psalms, also Leviticus. You know, he mentions love your neighbor as yourself. And so Paul is assuming that the people he's writing to have some knowledge of what he's talking about when he's drawing from scriptures. I always wondered, you know, how did the Gentiles know Israel's scriptures? If you're a Gentile and you come to have faith in Jesus and now Israel's scriptures are your scriptures, I mean, there's a lot there. How do you know what Paul's talking about when he brings up the Sarah and Hagar story and things like that? And one scholar wrote this, and this kind of answered my question for me. He says, Paul assumes that there will be teachers in the church whose task is to teach the word. And one can readily imagine that such teachers receiving this letter from Paul would be wanting to give a crash course on Genesis, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, Isaiah, and the Psalms, at least. In a sense, Paul's letters must have served in church after church as a kind of syllabus to be worked through. And for that, some serious scripture teaching would be essential. I think it's really helpful because, you know, in 1 Corinthians, Paul's talking about spiritual gifts. And he says that there are some in the church that are teachers. And there are people in the church who are bringing the Gentiles into Israel's scriptures and laying out, here's the story, here's what's going on, here's what you need to know. And Paul's letters are alluding to things that then the teachers in the church would make clear.
So it's a lot like us. We're not Jews, but...
Right.
We have to learn that.
Right. I mean, we still have teachers in the church that are expositing the scriptures to the wider body so that we can all come into understanding. Yeah. And then if you're reading Revelation, the last book of the Bible, John assumes that you know all of the rest of the Bible, New Testament included, because there are passages in Revelation that draw specifically from the Gospels. And John is writing his document in the language of all the rest of the Bible. And that's what makes it so challenging. If we don't know the rest of the Bible very well, then Revelation is really just hard to understand because we don't get the references. Revelation has lampstands, stars, scrolls, trumpets, plagues, clouds, cities, rivers, trees, and so much more. And all of those things, when they appear in Revelation, they harken back to how those have appeared in all the rest of the Bible. And so when Jesus is walking among the lampstands in chapter 1, it's referring back to the lampstands from Exodus that were fashioned and put in the tabernacle and other places where lampstands appear in the book of Zechariah and such. And we're just not going to get it. We're not going to understand if we don't go back and look at those previous places. So the Bible, it's 66 books written by numerous authors over a couple thousand years. but it's all telling the same story. It's all telling the exact same story. And each human author tells the story in his own style and accents different parts of the story, updating it as they go. But it's all the same story. The Bible isn't commenting on ancient Near Eastern culture. Sometimes scholars will look at it as, you know, the Bible itself is comparing itself to other cultures in the ancient Near East. It's not doing that. It's not comparing itself to other religions at the time. The Bible is telling its own story, and each writer has in mind what came before as he takes up his pen. Does that make sense?
Yep.
And what it means to read cumulatively, to think back to what's come before. So then that kind of asks the question of what is the main story then of Scripture? And what are all of the writers in their own different ways, what are they all referring to as the main story? And I think the best way to know that is to read the beginning and then read the end. And if you read the beginning and you read the end, you can get an idea of where they match up and what everything in between means and how it connects to the beginning and the end. So in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and he made man to be his image bearers in his good creation. But man rebelled and became separated from God, and creation could not flourish because of that. And man was evicted from the garden, but God promised that the seed of the woman would be victorious over the seed of the serpent. And that's Genesis 1 through 3 right there. That's the beginning of the Bible. At the end of the Bible, Revelation 21 and 22, we have people from every tribe and language and nation with the Lamb and the one seated on the throne, all seated on the throne. And the New Jerusalem has come down out of heaven. Heaven has come to earth. And there's been a reunion, and the reunion could happen because the seed of the woman triumphed over the seed of the serpent. And we who read the Bible are those who are following the Lamb and anticipating that day of future reunion. And that's what the Bible's all about. There's a separation and there's a reunion. In the beginning, you have creation. At the end, you have new creation. In the beginning, there's a tree of life. And at the end, there's a tree of life. In the beginning, there's a wedding, and at the end, there's a wedding. In the beginning, man is separated from God, and in the end, man is reunited with God. And everything in between Genesis 3 and Revelation 21 and 22 ties into that central story somehow and in some way. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You can see the Bible as one writer looks at the Bible as a five-act play. I think this can be helpful as a five-act play. So act one, you have creation. Act two, you have the fall. Act three is Israel and the story of Israel. Act four is Jesus. And act five is the church.
You do it again, Kelly.
Yep. So act one is creation. So Genesis 1 and 2. Act 2 is the fall, Genesis 3, really 3 through 11, because things just go from worse to worse after Genesis 3. Act 3 is Israel, which is pretty much the rest of the Old Testament and into the New. And then 4 is Jesus. Jesus is the climax of the Israel story. Jesus isn't separate from the Israel story. He's the fulfillment of the Israel story. The Israel story was always pointing toward the coming of the Messiah. And Jesus is the climax of the covenant. And then Act 5 is the church. And that's the age in which we live. We live in the same act as the early church and all the churches that Paul was writing to and that James was writing to and Peter and the rest. We're actors in the drama. And we know where everything is going. We know how everything has gone beforehand. And we know where everything is going. And we can see hints of this. Again, in Revelation 21, 22, Romans 8, 1 Corinthians 15. We can see where things are ultimately going in this reunion. And the Bible is our script, which shapes us to know how to live our countercultural story in the world. It gives us a way to improvise in our daily lives, in the situations that we come across. And we can draw from David and from Daniel and from Peter and from Paul how to respond counterculturally in the world in which we live. We're actors in the story, in the play. Does that make sense? So just a couple of thoughts about how to read cumulatively, a couple of, I don't want to say tips, but just a couple of thoughts about how to read cumulatively. An important thing is, again, wherever you are in the Bible, you want to pan back and remind yourself of the whole story. And you want to remind yourself of everything that has come before. And you might have to look up words and where they occurred in the story before where you are, just to see how that's working in the part of the Bible that you're in. Again, if you're in Revelation and you're reading about a lampstand, you want to go back and look and see where lampstands have occurred and what their function was, and then how that informs Revelation. You want to ask, where have I seen this before? The symbols and the patterns in Scripture recur frequently, and so you want to ask, where have I seen this before? I'm sure I have. And you want to look for patterns and develop instincts to see those patterns. Because if you see patterns frequently enough, you will recognize them throughout Scripture. There's a guy I like. He's a naturalist. His name is Tristan Gooley. And he writes books about nature. But the thing he likes to do is point out how in nature, almost everything is a sign. Almost everything communicates something in nature. And he has one book that I really like that has a lot to do with clouds and how to read clouds. And basically, you know, if you see cumulus clouds, the big puffy, you know, opening of the Simpsons kind of clouds, and they are wider than they are tall, you can be pretty sure that the weather is going to stay pretty calm. Like those are pretty flat clouds, and there's probably not bad weather on the way. But if you look in the sky and you see clouds that are taller than they are wide, there's a really good chance that there's a storm coming. Those are storm kind of clouds. And when you look in the sky and you see clouds, you can begin to develop an instinct that you don't have to think about it. And you just know, you see a cloud and you think, okay, it's going to stay fair. It's just an instinct that builds. Cirrus clouds are those really wispy clouds that are high up in the air, and they kind of look like commas and stuff. And those clouds, when you see them, very often point to a coming front that's going to change the weather, often, you know, bringing some kind of precipitation. And again, when you look in the sky and you see that, you don't have to think through, eventually you don't have to think through, okay, cirrus clouds, that means that there's a front that's coming. You just look and you're like, oh, I bet it might rain tomorrow. And you look at your weather app and you're like, oh yeah, they're calling for rain tomorrow. You begin to develop those kind of instincts. Well, the same thing is true in Scripture. We see patterns recur throughout, and it can develop instincts in us to be able to recognize those. So we've talked about wells in the Bible before, right? Where wells occur and what happens at wells. So Abraham's servant finds a wife for Isaac at a well. Right? That's where he finds Rebecca, at a well. Jacob meets his future wife, Rachel, at a well. Okay? So when we get to the book of Exodus then, and Moses is on the run from Pharaoh, and he shows up at a well, and there's a woman there, what do you think's going to happen? He's probably going to get married. Right? Because we've seen this happen a couple of times before. It's a pattern. All good. And then sometimes the pattern changes, or at least what the pattern means changes. So we have those references in mind. And then in John 4, Jesus, weary from his journey, sits down at a well, and a Samaritan woman who's been married five times and is currently living with a sixth comes to the well. And we think, now wait a minute. I'm pretty sure Jesus isn't going to marry the Samaritan woman just because they're at a well. So what's going to be different about this situation? And he offers her living water, which is more than water from the well. And in his conversation with her, he's declaring that the people of God are anyone who worships the Father in spirit and in truth, which is what it means to follow Jesus, is to worship the Father in spirit and in truth. This woman, as unlikely as it is, can be part of the bride of Christ, part of that marriage between Jesus and the church. And so it is a marriage at a well, but it's not the same kind of marriage that came before. When we see patterns, we also need to think of, like I said, what has changed. So the law, when we think of the law, we know that some things have changed because Christ came, but some parts of the law are still in force, right? We don't have to obey the part of the law that says you can't wear clothing of two different materials. That's no longer in force. But yet other things certainly are, like the ways in which we worship God, or certain things in Leviticus 18 and 20, which we won't necessarily go look at those, but those are still in force as well. And so we want to ask, okay, why is this still in force when this is not? And that's also part of reading cumulatively. Just because something is in Leviticus or in Deuteronomy, it doesn't mean it directly carries over and we apply it today. Does that make sense? All right. Well, I'm going to end there and then take some questions.